Some things shouldn't be transparent, like stop signs. But what you pay for should always be clear, like Hiller's True Transparency Pricing, always clearly itemized and never any hidden fees. Because you have the right to know what you're paying for. For more information, visit happyhiller.com/true-transparency-pricing. Happy you'll be, or the service is free.
Call the Happy Face Truck today.
Greg Cosell joins us each and every Wednesday, presented by the Huffaker Group of Keller Williams Realty. Make the right move by choosing Huffaker. Visit them online at thgtn.com or call 833-THG-NASH. Greg, how are you?
Jonathan, what's going on?
Ready to recap Super Bowl 53 with you. 13-3 final, but so many layers to peel away as we look through this game. And let's just start with the touchdown drive in the fourth quarter with Brady taking the field and Romo pointing out that they ran the same play three times, same formation three times. Did they?
Well, it wasn't the same formation. It was the same play concept because it had three routes that were essentially the same. It all came out of what we call 22 personnel, 22 empty. So they had two backs, two tight ends, and they were in empty sets. So they kept the Rams in their base personnel. And the three routes that were the important routes on this is Edelman from the inside ran essentially kind of a juke or a jerk route working in the short middle. They had the outside back run a hitch route. He was outside of Gronkowski. And Gronkowski, who was essentially then in the slot, ran the seam. So those three routes were the same three routes on all three plays. And on the second play of the drive, he hit Edelman on the juke or jerk route for 13 yards. Then he hit Burkhead, I believe, on the hitch. And then he hit Gronkowski on the seam for 29 yards down to the two-yard line. So Brady went to all three of the routes on that on those three consecutive plays.
McDaniel said after the game that prior to that drive with 10 minutes to go in the game, that he told the huddle, hey, we're scrapping our game plan and we're going to go with something we haven't practiced this week necessarily. On that drive, did you see things that you didn't see prior to that possession?
Well, the 22 personnel, I can't remember if it was the first time that they used 22 personnel, but 22 personnel with empty, I don't believe they had done in the game. So that may have been what he was speaking about. They went with 22 empty, and they got the Rams in their base personnel, and particularly on the Gronkowski on the third of the three plays, the Rams got a little bit confused. Littleton was uncertain as to who to cover, and he ended up racing to get Gronk, but he got there a tad late, and Brady made a great throw to Gronk.
I remember asking you after the Patriots-Chiefs game why we never saw Kansas City double Julian Edelman. And I'm asking the same question now after the Super Bowl. Why didn't they not adjust defensively? It was a good defensive game plan, but Edelman was the one consistent factor with how they were actually moving the football consistently during that game. Why didn't they try to double him at times?
I mean, they didn't. Look, that's easy to say after a game like that. The reality is the Patriots scored one touchdown, and it came in the fourth quarter. And, you know, Edelman had big numbers, and, you know, there were times they played man and put Peters on him, but they didn't specifically double him. There were times they played what we call one robber, which presents kind of a double with a safety dropping down in the short to intermediate middle with his eyes on Edelman if he worked inside, which he does tend to do. But did they blatantly, did they have dedicated doubles on Edelman? They did not.
Defensively for New England, give us your overall assessment of their game plan. And then I want to dive into a couple of individuals that stood out. But just on the this level, what did you think of their plan against the Rams?
That was, to me, the exciting part of this game, Jonathan. You know, for a guy who loves to watch tape, and in a 13-3 game, we tend to talk more about tactics than big plays because there aren't big plays. And I thought what the Patriots did was really fascinating. They did different things depending on situation. Now, in normal down and distance situations, such as 1st and 10, 2nd and 6, 2nd and 7, what they did is they played nickel, but they played with three corners for the most part. And what they did is they played a 6-1 front. So they had six across and one stacked linebacker. They played Patrick Chung and Kyle Van Noy essentially as outside linebackers on the outside of a four-man D-line. The one stacked linebacker was Dante Hightower. And they played Jonathan Jones, who's essentially a slot corner, as a safety in cover four or quarters coverage. This approach did two things. It negated the outside zone run game with a six-man front, and it also minimized all the crossing routes with the quarters coverage that come from the Rams' play-action pass game on first down. So they took away the two strengths of the Rams' offense on first down, where they get predominantly their big plays in the pass game.
Now, specifically, you mentioned Hightower. His impact in this game, every time we looked up, he was involved. But what was his role, and how did they use him in various situations against L.A.?
Well, he was the stacked linebacker in their 6-1 front. When Chung got hurt, he became an outside linebacker in their 6-1 front with Alandon Roberts replacing him as the stacked linebacker. And then when they went to their long yardage and third down defense, what they essentially did, they did two things there. If they played straight cover one, Hightower and Van Noy were part of the pressure schemes. And they did such a good job with their slanting and stunting concepts that it caused all kinds of problems for the Rams' offensive line, which I think surprised people, because the Rams' O-line had played so exceptionally well throughout the season. And Hightower was a part of that, as was Van Noy, and they were so effective with it. Then the other part of what they did on third downs at times was when they rushed four, they would bracket Robert Woods. They would double-team bracket him, and as we know, they matched up Gilmore on Cooks man-to-man. So they had multiple plans in long yardage and third down, and they executed those out of dime 60Bs and at times dollar with 70Bs. So they had clearly defined approaches on first down and normal down and distance situations, and clearly defined approaches in long yardage and third down.
McVay was very critical of himself. Was he simply too stubborn in this game? It didn't seem like it seemed like the story of the game in many ways was that McDaniels adjusted and came up with something different, and that McVay stayed true to what got them there and kind of beat his head against the wall with what they are.
That's probably fair, and my guess is McVay, a second-year head coach, probably learned a lot from this game, as did Jared Goff. Look, McVay is certainly a lot smarter than we are, but I think watching the tape, I think he stayed with what has been successful for him in his 2 years as a head coach and what the offense has been. And, you know, I think, look, there were plays that were missed as well for various reasons. And in a game like that, you know, a play here and a play there could have made the difference in the game. They actually ran a play in the first quarter. It was a first and 10 shot play on their second possession. And he had Cooks wide open on a vertical route. And the Patriots were able to exert pressure with a four-man rush with Wise and Shelton. And Goff did not have time to deliver the throw. In fact, that's the same play the Rams came back to in late in the third quarter, actually, when Goff missed what should have been the easy TD to Cooks. Everybody remembers that play where Jason McCourty came over from the backside and broke up the pass. That was a really nice job by the Patriots, but Goff still has to recognize it. That play is, for someone who loves watching tape, was a dream, because the Patriots showed what looked like cover three initially. Then they rotated to cover four, but it was play action, so Goff turned his back to the defense, and he did not adjust his read quickly enough when it went from cover three to cover four, and therefore he was late throwing to the wide-open Cooks on what should have been an easy stand-up touchdown.
What with Jared Goff, when is he functioning at his highest level in terms of how the Rams play? And what was it that led to his lowest level of production that we saw on Sunday with what the Patriots were doing defensively, and quite frankly, how he was playing in that game also, and what he wasn't seeing?
Well, Goff is a very programmed player in an offense that presents defined reads and throws for him. And when the defined reads and throws are not presented, Goff struggles. Much of that happened through the last 7-8 weeks of the season, which is why his statistical numbers dropped. I think he'll learn a lot from this game. I think McVay will learn a lot in how to deal with Goff in the offseason. Because it's wonderful to present all this to a quarterback. That's good coaching. But there's always going to be games, and against better teams and better defensive coaches, where everything is not as clearly defined as you'd like it to be. And that's where the quarterback has to adjust, and that's where the coach has to adjust. So to me, Goff played the way Goff has normally played. When it's clearly presented, he can make some throws. And he made a couple of really good throws in this game. Don't forget, he dropped a beautiful fade throw to Cooks just outside the red zone with 4:29 in the fourth quarter. Cooks got on top of Gilmore, and Goff's throw beat the post safety Harmon. Cooks has to catch that ball, you know. So he made a couple of really good throws versus man coverage in this game. But, you know, he's used to everything being clearly presented. The area he has to improve in is being a late in the down pocket quarterback, where he then goes through the reads and the progressions when the primary read does not present itself clearly.
Greg, go back in detail for us on the McCourty play where he tracks down that football. Patrick Chung had just left the game with an injury. He'd just been ruled out with that arm injury. Would Chung have been there in coverage, and how did McCourty recognize that play? Or am
You're
I wrong
about
in thinking
where he came into the end zone?
Yeah,
that
when he saved the touchdown. Yeah.
Oh, that was they were in quarters coverage, and they blew that. They ended up going to cover four from a cover three look. And they actually busted the coverage. Because what happens with a minus split by a wide receiver like Cooks had is a minus split puts a wide receiver closer to the formation. So if we want to talk about the concept of quarters, the outside corner is responsible for the outside receiver running vertical. Okay? So that was Gilmore. But because of the tight split and the slight angle of Cook's route inside, sometimes that can distort the coverage between the corner and the safety. As the receiver sort of bends a little bit inside, who is responsible for him? He's still the outside vertical, but he's running his route closer to the safety. So Gilmore and the safety to that side, I forget who it was, which safety it was, but they kind of lost their coverage, and Cooks was wide open.
I think it was Harmon.
What's that?
I think it was Harmon.
Yeah. So it was basically a post-cross combination. So Woods was running the crosser, and when Goff came off the play fake after he turned his back, he initially looked to Woods on the crosser, not recognizing that Cooks was wide open. So therefore, he went to Cooks very late. And by that time, McCourty, with no threat all the way on his other side of the field, he saw it and came flying over. And what was odd about the throw is the throw lost energy on the back end, and Goff had time in the pocket. The ball just lost energy. That should have been an easy touchdown.
On the other play, that would have been a more difficult touchdown or play inside the five to Cooks on the right.
Yeah,
where he didn't seem to get his second hand involved, and it didn't seem to be pinned. It seemed to me that Goff's back foot either kind of slipped.
Well, are you talking about the interception?
No, I'm talking about the play right before the interception.
Both throws, really, his foot slipped.
Yeah.
But the one right before it that Cooks dropped was a beautiful throw. He put that right there. That needed to be caught. I mean,
yeah,
that was placed where it needed to be caught. He got on top of Gilmore, and Harmon got there, but after the ball dropped out of Cooks' hands. The next play was the interception, and that was the first snap of zero blitz in the game by the Patriots. But the Patriots did not play press man behind the all-out pressure, but almost kind of a looser cover four matchup look. And that was a throw that Goff slipped. But I don't know, he had to get rid of the ball because Harmon was clean. Harmon was clean to the quarterback, and, you know, Goff did not really have time to really get definition. He threw it up to the one-on-one, but because Gilmore was playing bailed off coverage, not press man, Cooks could not get over the top of him.
I don't know if you have an answer for this, but did you feel like it was defenses playing well or offenses playing poorly or a combination of the two?
I saw it as once I watched when I watched the game live and I was actually struggling. I wasn't feeling well Sunday. It seemed like a terrible game to me, but that was probably also because I wasn't feeling great. Watching the tape, and I spent about 8 hours yesterday watching both sides because I really wanted to look carefully. I thought it was great defensive football. I thought we expect that, I guess, from Belichick. Wade Phillips has been doing this a really, really long time. We know the Rams statistically were not great during the season, but I thought what he did, particularly with his coverage, was phenomenal because they didn't get consistent pressure on Brady. I thought Brady struggled at times because he was taking a beat longer to decipher the coverage, which doesn't happen very often with Tom Brady.
Greg, they did that. The Rams defense did that with Aaron Donald and Ndamukong Suh combining for two unassisted tackles in that game.
They were not what really big factors as far as playmakers. You're correct.
And I would think going into it, if they hold New England to 13 points, I would think it would be Donald or Sue that would be a huge factor in reasons why they were getting pressure up the middle. I'm sure they still played a big factor, but they did not show up on the stat sheet. What was the game plan against those two in the middle?
Well, it wasn't – I think it's more effective, Jonathan, to talk about the overall approach. Because I think what Wade Phillips decided was, I'm not going to get consistent pressure on Brady because the Patriots' pass game does not allow for that. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to show multiple coverage looks. That's my starting point, not the pressure. I'm going to show multiple coverage looks and try to slow down the quick brain of Tom Brady. That's how I'm going to approach this. And then, if I can do that, then my rush can possibly be a factor. But I'm not going to build what I do around pressuring him because the ball gets out too fast.
One more for you. And I'll set it up by giving you my perspective. And then I want, because you're not going to watch the game the same way, on Todd Gurley. When I watch Gurley run back to the huddle, I notice there is some hitch in his gait. It doesn't look healthy to me. I also see a stat where he's clocked as the fastest player on the field on Super Bowl Sunday. So with those two things set aside, what did you see when you saw him in the game, and what did they lack when he was on the sideline, and how peculiar is it that he's on the sideline as much as he was?
None of us will know about the injury unless they announce something, and they've already come out and said he's got no injury. So, you know, that doesn't mean anything, but that's what they've said. I will only say this, and this is no knock on Sean McVay because none of us know. But to me, if Todd Gurley is 100% healthy, then Todd Gurley has to be out there for literally every snap. Maybe he gets a series off. But, you know, this offense last year when it took the league by storm and Gurley threw the first 12, 13 games of this year when he was an MVP candidate again was so good in the run game and a very good pass receiver for them. And then all of a sudden, the injury, he fell off the face of the earth. So I'd like to believe he was injured because I thought he'd be okay. I don't know anything about it, but if he's not injured, to me, he needs to be out there for literally every snap.
We're right there with you on that. Greg, are you ready to ramp up for free agency in the draft?
I'll be jumping into the draft now. That's what I'm doing. I'm probably starting with some quarterbacks. I won't get through every quarterback, because there's so many other players who are being talked about as higher draft choices. But that's what I'll be doing now, Jonathan.
We look forward to it, Greg, every Wednesday. We'll talk to you next week.
Appreciate it, guys. Thanks a lot.